Pomp on vacation for the rest of this week. We'll be rejoining forces on Monday. In the meantime, I'm with intern Dom, the man affectionately known as ID. Have you ever met the Batconian mongoose? Do you have any kind of relationship with him?
Well, we both went to Shaler different times, but we have the Titan connection. And I feel very fondly of Brian, and maybe he feels the same way about me.
You ever socialized with him?
No. We'll text if, you know, I'm bringing him on a show I'm producing, or, you know, on the phone we had a nice chat.
Yeah.
Getting him on.
Wonderful man, I found. Very generous, giving, big-hearted.
Yeah.
Brian, how are you?
I'm doing great, Joe. I am nearing Latrobe, and I will tell you this anecdote off the top. I remember my ninth grade basketball coach and Shaler journalism teacher, Eric Schott, emailing me at one point, five or six years ago, saying, we have this high school kid on the newspaper staff who really wants to go into sports media. Maybe you could talk to him sometime. His name's Dom DiTommaso.
Wow.
How about that?
How about that? And little did he know that this guy right here would go to Syracuse for the next 9 years and still be a part-time intern here at The Fan.
Yeah. And kind of on this note, Joe, I just texted you a link of me standing at whatever they call Cleveland Brown Stadium these days. And I would love for you to open that link and kind of tell the people what you see when you get a chance to do that.
Certainly, I can do that. Dom, I hope you weren't insulted by what I just said.
What, calling me a part-time intern?
No, about saying you went to Syracuse for the next 9 years.
No, I'm not insulted by it at all.
Okay.
But thank you for clarifying.
He went to Syracuse for two terms, Kennedy's and Nixon's.
What college?
That was my high school basketball coach's joke.
What college did you go to?
Pitt.
I didn't know that. I couldn't have guessed that. I honestly didn't know. Were you a fan? Did you go to the games, Brian? Who was playing basketball back then?
You know, unfortunately, I kind of came in at the tail end of the glory years because I remember specifically as a senior in high school, so I already knew that I was going to be going to Pitt, and I grew up a huge Pitt basketball fan. I was at my friend Dave's house for that Pitt-Villanova game. That was my senior year in high school, and I was crestfallen, heartbroken, when the Scotty Reynolds shot went in. And little did we know, from there, it'd be kind of downhill. And, you know, they had that number one seed when I was a freshman or sophomore, I guess. But that was the year they lost to Butler in the second round on the Nasir Robinson sort of, I don't want to say phantom foul, but very questionable foul call on Matt Howard. And then things really never turned around.
Yeah, I agree with you. I always thought that, you know, it was probably a foul, but come on at the end of the game there. Anyway, yeah. Brian, we're talking to Brian Batko, affectionately known as the Batconian Mongoose. He's on his way to Latrobe, and you can read his stuff at postgazette.com. They put on the pads today, which means backs against backers. Are we going to see a little Jack Sawyer maybe against Caleb Johnson? What matchups are we going to see? What matchup would you want to see?
So we could see that, but normally the way it works is the inside linebackers get the running backs and vice versa. And the outside linebackers, the edge rushers, more often match up with the tight ends. So we could see, Jack Sawyer against Darnell Washington, that is kind of like a break you in type of matchup, I think. If he gets Connor Hayward, Mike Tomlin will expect him to beat Connor Hayward, no offense to him, but size-wise, he's going to want to see the bigger guy win on that. And the running backs, you know, the big one last year that produced a lot of fireworks. Well, there are actually two. Patrick Queen versus Najee Harris, who was sort of reinvigorated in, you know, what turned out to be his final year. And then Jaylen Warren versus Elandon Roberts. You talk about two guys who do not want to lose in that drill. That was some of the feistiest I've ever seen.
Well, I can't remember whether it was your story or somebody else's today in the Post-Gazette, but apparently Mark Robinson, this is the only reason he's employed by the Steelers, is the backs-on-backers drill to test the running backs. What has become of this man, and he's going to be on the team again?
Well, I wouldn't say that. I mean, I think he's certainly very adept at this, given his skill set. But let's not discount his two forced fumbles last year on special teams. You know, the kind of the same mentality that you need to run a guy over in that drill is similar to running down on a kickoff or a punt and trying to dislodge the ball. I mean, what's become of him is he was a seventh-round pick who, frankly, wasn't on many people's radars. Like, I know Dane Brugler of The Athletic, he always does that big draft guide every year with, like, 300-player profiles, and he didn't even do one on Mark Robinson. So that kind of tells you how under the radar he was. So he was always facing long odds, and then I would say he didn't really hit in terms of knowing where to be in the defense and gaining that trust as a, you know, regular at inside linebacker. But he's still going to vie for a spot because of special teams, probably with Carson Bruner.
You're right about that. Perhaps I was unfair to Mark Robinson, a seventh-round pick. I think people thought when they first saw him that he could be a run stuffer and play a regular role, but he is a good special teams player. He is. You mentioned...
Remember, he got a couple chances when Devin Bush was just completely... I think it was a Ravens game even that Mike Tomlin actually turned to Mark Robinson and started him over Bush. And essentially when he was asked about it, said something like, we need some strikers out there. And that was kind of all you needed to know about how the Devin Bush thing went.
You mentioned another guy in your opening soliloquy, Connor Hayward. Is he going to make the team?
I don't know. I think he's very much on the bubble. I could see that one going either way, especially with the addition of Jonnu Smith, who's kind of just a bigger, more experienced version of what Connor Hayward does and can do. So if they want to keep a fourth tight end, and he's another one who, you know, when you're one of those core special teamers, you're not even necessarily competing against guys at your position. You're competing against James Pierre, Mark Robinson, Carson Bruner, Miles Killebrew. So if he can still get on through that avenue and they deem him that he's so reliable in that phase of the game, and then whatever he gives you on offense is just a bonus, then yeah, he still has a chance.
Brian Bacco of the Post-Gazette is on the Sullivan Super Service fan hotline, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. The text line, you can communicate with intern Dom that way, brought to you by Edgar Steiner & Associates, personal injury law firm, where they always say, there's never a fee unless we get money for you. All right, Brian, last year one of the big stories once they put the pads on was the unusual camp that Mike Tomlin ran. I remember some newcomers saying, wow, this is what they do here. They hit like this. I'm not sure that it serves him in the long run, honestly, but is that going to be the case again this year? Is that the vibe you're getting, that it will be, you know, as far as NFL camps go, a rough one with the hitting, more pads, more hitting than you'll find in other camps?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that's a staple of this, and guys like TJ Watt and Cam Hayward talk about it and how they need it to basically sharpen their swords in terms of the physicality. However, those two guys, and I think the other members of the over 30 club, of which there are maybe double figures at this point, they won't really be subjected to that as much. It's going to be more for the younger guys who are trying to prove themselves. But, yeah, I don't think he's really going to scale it back. I think that's the kind of intensity that he wants.
Dom, the thought of leaving you out of this conversation leaves myself and Brian greatly saddened. Please ask him a question.
You didn't prepare me for a question here, Joe.
Yes, I did. You should always see this as another test for you. You should always be on your toes and ready to ask questions. It's you and me today, buddy. Just us two.
All right, Brian, there's been a lot of excitement around Caleb Johnson. So what have you seen out of him at training camp so far, and what do you expect to see out of him this season?
Definitely see a guy who gets to the second level quickly, and maybe this is just recency bias, but it feels like more urgently than Najee Harris when it comes to that part of his game. And, you know, he's listed at, I think, you know, 6'1", 224, but he's such a sleek or chiseled 224. Like, it's not at all bulky or thick. I mean, he's almost slender at his size. So, yeah, I mean, he's got, you know, a big body to throw out there, but he's not necessarily this big bruising back, at least not at this point. And I'm sure all these guys are dropping pounds left and right in this St. Vincent College heat.
I thought that intern Dom's question was well worded, phrased, and even the diction on it was outstanding. Do you agree?
Incredible word choice by intern Dom. Sometimes less is more.
Exactly. And that's what they teach over at Shaler, from what I understand, Brian. Yes?
Yeah. Clear, concise writing. That is absolutely a hallmark of those who come up through the ranks of the Oracle, our student paper.
Did you both write for the Oracle?
Yeah. Did you click the link that Brian sent you? I'm assuming it's the same one he sent me.
Oh, wait. Is it a story by you from... Oh, my God. There it is. The Oracle chats with Brian Batko, the Shaler Oracle. Wow. Were you a beat writer there, Dom?
Yeah, I guess you could say that. I was like the Bob Smizik of Shaler for 3 years.
That's great. Okay, let's move along here, Brian. Your Aaron Rodgers experience so far, what are you seeing?
I mean, I wouldn't say he's been overly sharp, but, you know, it's four practices and, you know, everybody's kind of getting the chemistry down. He's been, I would say, not as like fan friendly necessarily as Russell Wilson. He's a little bit more reserved, which I think we could all kind of know that from his personality and the perceptions we had of the two guys. But it seems like he's doing a lot of the same stuff in terms of bonding with teammates, and you know, everybody seems to talk about his
Wait a second. You didn't tell me that Dominic wrote this story, that he's the one that interviewed you for the Shaler Oracle. This is a Q&A from April 22nd, 2021.
Why do you think he sent it to you?
I don't know why he sent it to me.
Enough with Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, this is fabulous. It's a Q&A, Dom DiTommaso talking to Brian Batko of the Post-Gazette from 21. This is amazing.
And it was such a formative project for Dom that he did not mention it at the beginning of the segment when you asked him if we've interacted or socialized or however you put it. He's written so many stories and talked to so many notable people that this one is way down the list.
One of his questions is so insightful. Do you see more of a competitive or fraternity feel between yourself and other reporters?
Wow.
How would you answer that, Brian? Is it more competition with the likes of Mark Cabali and Dayon and, I don't know, Benzie perhaps even? Or is it more of a fraternity-like feel? I think that's a wonderful question.
Yeah, Dom really getting to the, you know, the nuances of the media world as a young high school beat writer, reporter, features, enterprise man, investigator. I would say it's some of both. I mean, I think we're all trying to write things and pursue stories that are unique, which, as you know, Joe, as well as anybody, I mean, it gets harder and harder to do every year with more media covering sports, especially the NFL and especially the Steelers. So I think there's absolutely that urge and drive to uncover something that's new or different. But I also think, and I haven't been in any other media markets, let alone covered other NFL teams, but I think we all get along pretty well around here. And part of that too is covering the Steelers is such a, you know, it's such an entrenched job that a lot of people get it. They stick around for a while and we become quite friendly around these parts.
Dom also asked you a hard hitting question. Have you ever been told off before by an athlete?
He would want to know that 5 years ago, wouldn't he?
Yes.
He's always looking for those salacious angles.
Yes.
Well, have you?
Yes, absolutely. I remember thinking, well, George Pickens comes to mind very, very early on here in this. Najee Harris, too. I had some good moments with Najee because he was very moody, I guess. But, yeah, I mean, those two could be quite prickly and difficult to deal with. And then there's like the, I don't know, I mean, someone like Isaac Seumalo, he doesn't necessarily tell you off, but he's just not very interested in doing it. But I remember when I covered Pitt and I, you know, transitioned to the Steelers beat thinking, oh, this is great. It won't just be whatever players the school gives us this day. We can talk to whoever we want on any given day. I quickly found out that the multimillionaires in the pro ranks are not necessarily any more accessible than the guys in college.
Well, give us some details, for God's sakes. What happened with Pickens and or Najee?
All right, let me try to think here. With George, I remember, I think it was the end of his second season. Yeah, the end of his second season. And by that point, he was already, to put it nicely, hit or miss with talking to the media. So you never really knew what hornet's nest you were walking into that day. But I think I approached in the locker room, not with a camera out or anything, and asked him if he had a minute, and he just kind of pointed to his compression shorts or whatever, of like, I'm not ready. And it's like, okay, sometimes you don't want to wait for guys and sometimes you do. And then I was like, oh, I was going to ask him about, being a Pro Bowl snub, because a lot of people here thought he should have been in it that year.
Yeah.
He's like, I have nothing to say about the Pro Bowl. You guys are weird, whatever. I'm like, okay. That was
okay.
Enjoyable.
Yes.
Yeah. And then Najee too. Was it going into this past season? Maybe it was when he like really, really shut down and really wanted nothing to do with interviews. I just tried to go up and talk to him one-on-one and just say like, hey, did something happen? Did somebody write something? Are you going to be doing this all season? Or like, just what, we don't even have to talk on the record, just human to human. Like, is everything good? And he just kind of smiled and said, shook his head and didn't really say anything and walked out. So
that reminds
me around there a little bit. He was fine this last season, but yeah, I mean that was an awkward one, but I still feel like that's just like kind of a normal leveling with people thing that you should do every now and again.
Yeah, that doesn't really rise to the level of the near fist fights that I've been in, but it's close enough. It also reminds me of Walt Harris. When he was at Pitt one day, outside during practice, I said, Walt, between me and you, and he jumped in and he said, there is no between me and you. That was a great line. There is no between me and you. So that was the last of my hopes of getting anything off the record from Walt. But that happens from time to time,
yeah.
Brian. And I interrupted you in the middle of your Aaron Rodgers soliloquy. Please continue.
It's been fine. I mean, he doesn't really seem particularly, standoffish or anything. It seems like he's getting along well with the teammates. He kind of like showed the wheels a little bit, the 41-year-old wheels Sunday, and, took one up the sideline, and Patrick Queen, hounded him out of bounds, but he wouldn't dare touch him. And Rodgers, I'm sure remembering that Queen picked him off on that first pass, must have been saying something to him. And then he kind of, drop the ball off of his head like they used to do on the And One mixtape tour, and that was pretty funny.
Now, that's significant to me, at least the topic of Rodgers and his mobility, because last year there were times where that was, to me, the most noticeable thing is while he was never really a great runner beyond the line of scrimmage, he was good, he could make things happen. It was more behind the line of scrimmage. One of the all-time greats, throwing on the run, throwing against his body, all that stuff, and his ability to evade tacklers behind the line of scrimmage and keep plays alive and throw on the run. If you take that away from him, then he's just not Aaron Rodgers anymore, and I thought that really wasn't much a part of his game last year. So do you sense him moving around well?
Yeah, I think so. When I went back this offseason and watched some of the names that were on the tip of the tongues of Steelers fans, I thought Rodgers still moved around okay. Kirk Cousins, I was like, I really don't see it. I mean, he has to take a day and a half to get up to speed, and then he might be able to get you a few yards scrambling. Otherwise, he just kind of turtles back there. So I thought Rodgers had a little bit more athleticism left in him than someone like Cousins. I wonder, Joe, like sort of to your point there, I mean, it's the biggest thing. Is he going to be able to kind of step up quickly, climb the pocket, like you said, evade a rusher and extend a play? That's what I think remains to be seen. And, you can find some of it on his video from last year. It's not like he's the young Aaron Rodgers who's moving downfield, pump faking, and then sliding and bouncing back up, and you've got a first down. I don't know how much of that we're going to see, but, I don't think he's just going to be a sitting duck, back there. I think compared to like the final year or two of Ben, I think he's got a little bit more wiggle than that.
Joey Porter Jr. Last week mentioned something about the Steelers having three elite defensive backs. Any idea who he might have been referring to?
Well, himself, of course. That's that athletic arrogance that you need, irrational confidence, whatever you want to call it. Big play Slay, who said he's, you know, probably retiring after this season, but he did come off a Super Bowl championship. And then Jalen Ramsey, number 66 on your NFL player ranking top 100. And I think that's a list that Cam Hayward was in, like, the 80s or the 90s. So that tells you how much stock you should put into that.
Somebody told me that Myles Garrett was slightly ahead of T.J. Watt, and they wondered if T.J. Watt was going to have any sort of protest against that for the Madden rankings. Do you, I know you follow those types of things.
Oh,
do
for
you
the
not?
Madden rankings. Yeah. I thought you. I meant the like NFL Network when they do
oh,
the
okay.
100.
Yeah, yeah.
No, but I think to your point, I don't necessarily follow it. I haven't played video games in a while, but I did see. I think T.J. is not a 99 overall in the game, and Myles Garrett is. I guarantee you. TJ would not have anything headline worthy to say about that. But I don't know if it's right. I'll say that much.
Dom, do you play Madden?
Yeah, I do. Not as much as I used to because I'm a, you know, a mature college student. But yeah, yes, I
you're
do.
A borderline adult at this point. But I'd like to play you in it. Can we do it where I'm wearing a headset at my house and you are at your house?
Do you have a console of any kind?
I can get one later today.
You know how much this cost, right?
I don't care.
Okay.
I have nothing to do. My daughter's going off to college. I want to numb myself in video games.
So I guess we're not playing golf at some point then? We're going to resort to video games?
No, we can play golf.
But all right.
I'm hoping to spend a large portion of the rest of my life numb on video games, if you don't mind.
Can I ask Brian another question, by the way? I know
sure.
he has to leave soon, but you opened up my mic earlier, so I'll take advantage. Brian, I know a lot of NFL
teams... You
always
do, Dom.
That's exactly right. I'm not going to make that joke. A lot of NFL teams do not hold their training camp at a college site the way the Steelers do. And I know it's very nostalgic and it's a cool thing that they do. And Rodgers and DK sharing a dorm is fun and all.
He's sharing a dorm with DK Pittsburgh Sports?
No, DK Metcalf.
Oh.
But thank you for chiming in, Joe. Brian, do you expect the Steelers to stay in Latrobe for the foreseeable future? Or do you think they'll be making a move out of St. Vincent at some time soon?
Well, Dominic, I sit here in the parking lot and look to my left where they are doing work on what I believe is going to be an indoor facility that will have multi-use ability out here at St. Vincent College. So that tells me the Steelers absolutely are going to have reason to stay here for a long time. And this new athletic center that was announced a year ago, they've been working on it every day that I've been out here, so that'll help. And I think they very much had their opportunity to sort of rip the Band-Aid off and leave Latrobe because of the COVID years where they had camp in Pittsburgh for back-to-back summers. So I don't think they are going to do that, considering they came back out here. They really value it. But, yeah, you're right. It is a dwindling number. I think the Panthers went to Wofford College for at least part of camp this year. The Chiefs go to a place. The Bills go to a place. I was just listening before you guys called to an interview with George Pickens in Dallas, but he's not in Dallas. He's in Oxnard, California, because the Cowboys, for whatever reason, go out to L.A. or wherever that is. And I was just thinking, I'm not saying anything about ownership or coaches or team culture, but going from the hot, sticky, humid suites at St. Vincent College to Oxnard, California for training camp and then being back at the Star facility and playing all your home games indoors, that's a little bit of a move up in the world for George Pickens, and I think he believes that too.
15 seconds, Brian. Say them all. Broderick Jones injuries. Big deal, small deal, no deal?
Small deal still for now.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
See you, buddy.
See you guys.
Seems as if Brian was suddenly on tape delay at the end with delayed answers, intern Dom, didn't it?
I think you maybe caught him by surprise by abruptly ending the interview.
Well, I said 15 seconds, so it was clear that the end was near. No?
Can you grade my two questions I asked him? I want to get
the second
feedback.
One was unbelievable. You might have even gotten some news in there. They have an indoor facility. What did he say there?
They're building a new facility in St. Vincent, so he expects them to be there for the long run.
That's like a weight room type thing?
I would assume so.
They have to go indoors if it rains type thing?
Yeah, I would say all of the above. Maybe maybe a field or something to practice.
That's a big assumption that they would have an indoor field. You should have clarified.
Listen, Joe, you could have clarified.
It was your question. I'm busy trying to take care of everything else we have to do here.
All right, fair enough. Now I know for next time.
Well, next segment is your segment. It's time for the Limitless Express, we call it around here. It's essentially a football fix, and while we're copying Pony's show for half of our show, why not do that too? What do you got?
We're doing that now?
Yes, I told you 11:30.
I thought we were taking a break and then doing it.
Well, of course we are, but I'm asking you to tease to the next segment.
Oh, you want me to tease?
Yes.
Oh, I can do that. Well, I have five stories for you. I have a fascinating NFL story revolving a media dispute, a fascinating story out of Whippeel, the Whips, a couple of other things.
Okay. I can't wait for that, especially the last part.
The couple other things?
Yeah. All right, that's intern Dom. Bob still on vacation. We roll on with the Limitless Express. And then coming up, our next guest, who I've forgotten who it is. Oh, Michael McHenry. That's not till 1. We have a lot. Oh, at noon is 10 observations from camp so far and questions. You could phrase it any way you like. I'm going to answer the question of Broderick Jones and Seumalo and this offensive line. Is that your biggest concern going into that season? All of that ahead on Pomp and Joe. All right, we have an update on what I opened the show with, which is that I was not aware that Skeens had said these comments on Sunday, essentially calling out ownership for not doing enough. I blamed a lot of people, and I think in order, unfortunately, it was Jolie number one, Sean, don't call me Seth Meyers number two, and Zangrilli number three, and Zangrilli is now moving up the ranks. I went on the air yesterday not knowing that Skeens had said this in the post game on Sunday. Dom, intern Dom, are you listening?
Loud and clear.
And you're not off the hook either yet.
Which is absurd, but continue. So
I come in blind on Monday. I don't know that he said this, and I missed it. And then Pony comes on and leads his show with it. Here's the kicker. I talked to Zangrilli, who conducted the interview, very adroitly, I might add, right before my show on Monday. I said, Dan, you were great on the air doing play-by-play, filling in for Joe Block, I believe, or both. I don't know who he was filling in for. He was really good. And the pregame was good Sunday. That's the kicker. Yeah, that's the kicker. I told him that.
Well, you said he also sent you something.
And
that
he sent
Charrington
me a clip of Charrington.
Yeah.
Everybody knows what Charrington said, but he didn't send me the Skeens clip. Guess who he made sure knew about the Skeens clip?
Go ahead.
Pony walked in here, was getting himself a nice sandwich with macaroni salad, and really wanted to dig in on me. Really wanted to rub it in. He said, Joe, new development. Look at the text Zangrilli sent me before the show yesterday. It was all about Skeens, and I quote, I just wanted to make sure you knew. What the hell is going on here? Am I being sabotaged by Zangrilli?
It's starting to look like it, to be honest. I mean, he gave it to the show that follows you.
Yes.
After your show.
Right.
He's giving them the juicy quote. He's giving you, you know, Charrington probably saying some BS. He gives the juicy quote to Pony.
So I just texted Zangrilli and said, why didn't you tell me of Skeen's clip with many exclamation marks? And he said, I don't know, with a question mark and an exclamation mark. To be continued here.
Well, that got us nowhere.
I mean, this is real. I'm very unhappy about this. Anyway, it's time for a football fix or whatever we want to call it. I guess we're just copying Pony today. What are we going to do later? Judge Donnie, is he going to be on the show? Why don't we just copy the whole Pony show from yesterday?
Might as well.
Go ahead.
All right, Joe. So I have five things here. We'll see if we can get to all of it in a decent amount of time.
Okay.
So let's start with this story that has kind of blown up into something much bigger than anybody would have anticipated. I'm not sure if you've been following this.
Probably not, but maybe Zangrilli is.
If he was, he wouldn't be telling you about it. So last week, the Raiders released Christian Wilkins.
Yeah.
They signed him in March of last year to a four-year, $110 million contract.
Yeah.
So them releasing him took people by surprise. And on the surface, it looks like a move that kind of makes sense. The Raiders reportedly wanted him to undergo some foot procedure. He pushed back on it. So they said, we're going to cut him, void the rest of his guaranteed money, and save about $35 million.
Yep.
Well, some people in the media are saying there's a little bit more to this story than meets the eye.
Please.
So, Adam Schefter yesterday, I believe it was yesterday, went on Pat McAfee and said, from speaking to people inside the Raiders locker room, Christian Wilkins apparently at some point, at some time, was, you know, messing around and playfully went to kiss a teammate on the top of the head. That was taken offense by different people. Everybody's been dancing around it, according to Schefter, and that's why he was released. Then,
what?
Mike Florio,
yeah,
quote tweeted that Schefter quote, and Schefter said, that is definitely not the story that has been making the rounds, but inferring that there is something else that is going on here. So it appears that nobody knows what's going on. The people that might know what's going on aren't saying, and now a pretty good player has been cut by the Raiders for a mysterious reason.
Man, that took a long time. Is Schefter sticking to his story that it was because he playfully kissed a teammate on the head?
Yes, and he was saying that people took offense to that and that had something to do with him getting cut. Mike Florio is saying that's not the case.
That it was another reason. Doesn't he have an injured foot?
He does. So
maybe
again,
the Steelers could sign him. They like defensive linemen with injured feet.
Yeah, the Steelers will gladly take him.
He could be the next Larry Ogunjobi. I don't know what to tell you on that. I need to hear more about the story. If it was playful, then why would anybody care?
That's why it's so interesting. That's why I brought it up in the Limitless Express, whatever the hell this is called.
Yeah, the Limitless Express. It is kind of cumbersome, isn't it, the name?
Yeah.
I need to see more on this story before I can have an intelligent comment, Dom. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. Don't worry about it.
Not as sorry as
you can derail my segment and put me down. That's fine.
Not as sorry as I am that you let off with that particular story, but on to the next one.
Next story. So this is a big story out of Whippeo football. Last night, Mike White reporting that junior wide receiver / defensive back Khalil Taylor,
yeah,
who was a sophomore at Seton LaSalle, he's going to be a
junior. And a very good one.
A very good one. Already has a verbal commitment to Penn State.
Yeah.
He is transferring to Pine Ridgeland. Now, let me give you some of the gory details here, and then I have a take for you. So
Hold on a second here. Let me just ask you a couple of quick questions.
Okay.
Is he allowed to play this year?
So that was one of the things I was going to say. He is ineligible for the postseason no matter what. If it is ruled that he transferred for athletic reasons, he would be ineligible for the season. However, he is claiming that it was not for athletic reasons. He moved because his dad now lives in Pine Ridgeland's district. But, and then this is getting to my point, his dad moved to Pine Ridgeland a few months ago because of his job. So this is all very coincidental. And here's my take on this, Joe. You cannot tell me that these Whippeo schools, particularly Pine Ridgeland, are not going out and recruiting players. There's just no way. This is stuff that we see in college. And I don't blame Taylor for making the decision, because who wouldn't want to play at Pine Ridgeland for a great head coach in a great school district for a team that is just churning out players? But for people who try to make the claim that Pine Ridgeland and Central and NA and all these behemoths aren't recruiting players, you're full of it. There's just no way.
You're going to hear about all this, and I like that, and I like your take. I don't know if I mean, let me think about this before I say what I'm going to say. Yeah, don't a lot of schools recruit players?
Yeah, but people make it out to be that that doesn't happen, and oh, kids will transfer because they're moving, but no.
Now, this may very well be legitimate, though. That's the thing. How do you know it's not?
I'm just saying it's very coincidental that he's moving because of his dad, who just moved to Pine Ridgeland a few months ago. I guarantee you Pine Richland had something to do with this.
Be able to recruit then? Should we just let everybody recruit?
Yes. I would have no issue with it. But to hide the fact that it's happening, I think, is ignorant. And again, I don't blame the players.
I don't know. He's already going to Penn State, right?
Yes.
So the hard work is already done. He's going to Penn State. So he doesn't need to enhance his profile. So I tend to believe that this is what's happening.
Well, you're playing
He can't even play under the best of circumstances. He won't even be able to play in the playoffs.
True, but you get to play under John Ledon, who's become one of the best high school head coaches. You're playing at top-tier facilities, not saying Seton LaSalle doesn't, but they're not on the level of Pine Richland. You're going to be under a huge spotlight. KDK AM does their games. The TV will carry their games. Again, right. I don't blame him for doing
this. Limits usually just reads headlines off Pro Football Talk. You're getting very creative and deep here, yeah. Which I like and I respect and admire.
I could be boring and read headlines, but we're doing a radio show here. You got to be creative. All right, three more here.
And now Zangrilli texts in and says, I thought you religiously listened to the post game. I said, no, not every day, not on Sunday.
You're a busy man.
Go ahead.
All right, three more stories here. Next one, Urban Meyer recently appeared on some podcast. I should have written the name down, so major apologies. But he was on this podcast, and they asked him about Arch Manning. And Urban Meyer, essentially the meat of what he was saying, is that Arch Manning is going to be under unfair pressure because, you know, last name is Manning, playing at Texas, the whole nine yards.
Yeah.
So, take for you, I don't think there is going to be a more scrutinized, interesting, entertaining, riveting athlete in sports this fall than Arch Manning. A lot of that does have to do with his last name. So do you believe unfair expectations placed on him because he is a Manning?
No. I mean, there's pressure on every single quarterback at a high-level school in college. Will there be extra pressure because his name is Manning? I guess, but what does Urban Meyer mean by undue pressure?
Unfair pressure.
No, it's not unfair pressure.
He said,
just pressure.
He said, quote, a player with that name, Manning, that background, Manning family, and the expectations, it is, quote, unfair pressure.
No, it's not. It's realistic pressure. Go out and perform. And if he does, maybe he'll be the Steelers' next quarterback, right? We don't have time for this, Dom. We have to go.
Okay, one more.
Let's go one more.
One more. John Gruden has said that he's trying to get back into coaching.
Well, who's he working for as a consultant for who?
The Saints, I want to say.
Is he? Is he actually being paid for that?
I think so. I know he works for Barstool. That's his, you know, daytime gig.
I don't know, man. With the things that went down, might it be tough for him to run a locker room? I don't know. I tend to think that in the end, all players care about is can you give me a roadmap toward winning? And that sometimes things are forgotten, but some of that stuff was kind of ugly. So that might be rough for him to get that job. That's my opinion.
Number five, to put a bow tie on this great segment. I put out my top 10 quarterbacks of all time list last night for just no reason. And people had issue that I put Roger Staubach over Terry Bradshaw. What would you say? Who's the greater all-time quarterback? Because maybe I'm in the wrong here.
Well, you are. I mean, did you miss the Super Bowls that they played in that Bradshaw beat him twice and was the MVP twice?
Eli beat Brady in a Super Bowl twice.
Have you lost your mind?
Eli Manning beat Tom Brady twice in a Super Bowl. Doesn't mean he's better than him.
That's actually a good reply. But let's not be ridiculous here. It's Tom Brady. That's actually a horrible reply. Nobody in their right mind would you don't need to go to tiebreakers to decide between Eli Manning and Tom Brady. Staubach and Bradshaw were comparable quarterbacks. I'm not going to rip you for that take, but I think in that case you have a tiebreaker. And it's not just the Super Bowls, it was that Bradshaw was spectacular in both.
So like, I'm genuinely asking as somebody who is older and saw them.
Yes.
Do people genuinely believe, watching both of those quarterbacks, that Terry Bradshaw was a more talented QB than Roger Staubach? I get the 4-0 in Super Bowls, even though he was surrounded by Hall of Famers, but looking at the consistency and clutchness of Roger Staubach, and Bradshaw threw a ton of interceptions, he was inaccurate. He made bad decisions. Do people really think that Staubach was a lesser quarterback than Terry Bradshaw?
Yes. Did you ever see Staubach's, I mean, Bradshaw's running numbers? Now, Staubach was a great scrambler as well, like legendary scrambler. I'll acknowledge this. They were extremely close in terms of resume and in terms of skill. I'm not saying they weren't, and I'm not necessarily going to rip you for that. I'm not. But a lot of guys threw a lot of interceptions. It's not like Staubach didn't. He had years where he threw more interceptions than touchdowns, Dom.
Yeah, but Bradshaw, for his career, almost threw more interceptions than touchdowns.
Did Staubach ever win an MVP? I'll answer that question. No. Did Bradshaw? I'll answer that question. Yes. I don't think it's a crazy take, though, to be honest. In the end, I don't think you've made a crazy take there. Roger Staubach was a great, great player. So I won't rip you for that. I'll just rip you for a lot of other things.
Fair enough.
I have questions about training camp here as the Steelers get ready to put on pads. I think Terry Bradshaw, I've said this many times, is the greatest clutch deep ball passer of all time. And you can say it's not like Roger Staubach wasn't surrounded with Hall of Fame talent, my friend. I think Tony Dorsett was in his backfield. I think that Drew Pearson was one of his receivers. He had a great offensive line.
Okay, but Bradshaw had Hall of Famers at genuinely every position on that team. Defense, offensive line, wide receiver, running back. Everywhere, head coach.
So did the Cowboys.
Not on the level of the Steelers, though.
Close.
But not, I mean, those it's the greatest team of all time for a reason.
Yeah, and he's one of the main reasons. I'll put it this way. Without Terry Bradshaw, I bet you they only win one or two Super Bowls.
Oh, I disagree with you there, my friend. 100%.
Really?
Yeah,
really?
I really
who
do.
Who makes all the throws then against the Rams and against the Cowboys?
You're throwing to Lynn Swann and he's making circus catches?
Yeah, go watch Terry Bradshaw on his throw where I think it was Cliff Harris concussed him in the first Dallas game. 65 yards in the air right in Lynn Swann's hands at the goal line. Once the rules changed, the Steelers became way more of a passing team. I'll grant you this, he was largely a passenger on the first Super Bowl team, but on the other ones, he was unbelievable.
I'll give you, he had a strong arm, maybe one of the strongest you've ever seen. But in terms of accuracy and just making
It was way more than that. He also called the plays, and because he's capitalized on his reputation as a dummy, he sort of leaned into that and made millions of dollars. People regard him as that. He was unbelievably smart as a play caller and egoless as a play caller.
I don't doubt
either of those. He called the plays. And he was also brilliant at the biggest moments in big games against the biggest games. The biggest games.
So you're telling
me he riddled the Cowboys. He riddled the Rams. I don't know that any other quarterback just steps in and does that and makes the kind of throws he made late in games and at key points in games to win Super Bowls. He wasn't dinking and dunking the ball down the field. He had the cojones of a lion.
So if you switch Roger Staubach and Terry Bradshaw, I think Steelers win just as many. I think Cowboys win probably just as many. He won two.
I disagree.
Maybe less.
That I disagree with. I think the Steelers of the 70s win one or two Super Bowls without Bradshaw. I wonder what people think of that. Should we put that on the line here?
Yeah, I'm kind of curious, actually.
412-928-9370. And then we're going to get to questions with the Steelers in camp because we have lots of them. Fan weather brought to you by Myers Law Group, Pittsburgh's choice for affordable legal solutions. Slight chance of rain, partly cloudy all day, sunny with a high of 90 and a low of Evgeny Malkin, which is 71. It's Pomp and Joe.